Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate here with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
Hi, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. Just got over the stomach bug, so that was not as fun, but you know, that's life. So,
well, I think with like things like that, especially like these days, everyone's like, okay, is it a stomach bug or is it the dreaded COVID? Is it, you know, am I just having some chills or is it COVID? Am I having like a little, and like for some reason, at least, you know, in the circles I run with, there's always that added level of stress, like, oh, you're sick. Are you that kind of sick?
Like, no, pretty sure it's just a stomach bug. And we're good now. Luckily, the kids all get it. That's a good thing. Because as you guys know, or you may not know, I have 8 kids. Mark has 5 kids. It's a lot of children. And so when the house gets sick, it can be pretty dramatic.
Speaking of drama, your family, and at least on my end.
Right.
Yeah.
And speaking of drama, today we're talking about drama and how to reduce drama, tension, and stress in your marriage. And we're going to say within 24 hours when you apply some of the methods that Mark and I teach here at High Thrive Coaching. So if you have a lot of drama, tension, and stress in your marriage, we're going to be talking about that with you today. So before we get to that, though, we're going to do our client win of the week. Mark, you want to share this one?
Yeah. So this is coming from Alex. Alex says that it's been a couple months. My wife moved out last April. It's just been me and the kids since. There have been some communication, but especially in the beginning, it would always turn into an argument. There's a point, though, through this process, she told me that she had no feelings left for me and she had completely checked out. I've been going through the process since. I didn't know if we would get back together. Put my time into my kids and keeping the house running. This is underlined. I started personal development and really getting to work. This whole time I relied on her, honestly looking back more than I should have. So I became self-reliant, strengthened the relationship with my kids, and started getting to business. Alex goes on and says, it has taken a lot of personal development and these past couple months hasn't been easy. That being said, my wife and I had a long conversation and she wants to start moving back in and reconciling. So I can see that this is going to be a long process, Alex says, but she's starting to put in the effort to come back. For the first time in a long time, I feel like we may work it out and be a family again. I'm still giving her space and I'm not rushing the process. I know we still have a lot of work though, but we are actually talking about the issues and both of us have started to take responsibility for our roles in the situation. If you made it this far, thanks for letting me share the wins. I love this because this is a point that I see in a lot of relationships that do come back together. It's this point where, you know, I think everyone wants things to work out, but there needs to be a little bit of patience. And I'm glad that Alex was recognizing that because it can be really hard, you know, if you're saying, hey, we've been doing this for 6 months or a year and I just want my family back. But it looks like Alex is taking a good move here and just being slow to come back together, making sure that they're working through things. So good job on that, Alex.
Yeah, I love that he talks about the drama right here at the beginning, that everything when they were communicating before used to turn into an argument, and then how he got like completely checked out, right? And how she was completely checked out and didn't know if they'd get back together. That's a lot of drama. And he's like keeping the kids and the house running. That's a lot to take on. And then looking at what he can do to become self-reliant, to strengthen his relationship, right? And doing all those things that he needed to do. And now that they're getting communication open and reducing that drama and tension. So you guys may know, you may not know, you may have been following us for a long time. You may have just barely heard of here, you know, us here at High Thrive Coaching. But Mark and I, we help thousands of couples just like you guys around the world. And one thing that's really common is certain things that are bringing a couple together. And then there's certain things that pull couples apart. And Mark and I have seen that one of the first things that we want to do when helping a couple like this in a situation, which is where you may be as well, especially if there's a lot of drama and tension and stress, is to reduce that tension and that anger and get to a more neutral, safe zone where we start to have some respect and then build in some empathy and understanding. So that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today. I loved that we put this question over here in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group called The Thriving Marriage. And we asked you guys what triggers drama, tension, and stress in your marriage and how do you handle them. And some of the most common ones you guys talked about were this yelling, accusation, arguments, cell phones, interesting, alcohol, violence, lies, lack of sex, ignoring the spouse, ignoring the problems, childhood trauma. We talked about mental health issues last week some. So if you guys missed that episode, I really encourage you to go back and check that out. Mark did an incredible job on that. Dismissing my feeling, lies, silent treatment, cheating, all and on, you know, going on and on here. All these different things that are causing you guys drama and stress. My wife saying she loves me, but not in love with me. So can you tell? I mean, we got so many comments here that you guys, first of all, are not alone, right? That there are a lot of other couples that are experiencing this as well. And give yourself some grace that you haven't known how to handle these things up until now. But today you can start to learn some new things to start to get some results. Because when we do new things, we get new results. If we keep doing the same thing, we're going to keep getting the same results, right? And I particularly love what we're about to talk about here with the drama triangle. This is something that I learned about several years ago, and it was really illuminating to me. So as we go into this with Mark here, I want you guys to really check in and see, okay, what role have I taken on in this drama triangle? And sometimes it's, in fact, most of the time, it's usually more than one role. It tends to be kind of the cycle. And what role is my partner taking on? And is that where we really want to be? So what are we talking about here today with this stress, well, this tension, this anger, this resentment?
Now, I'm going to point out, like, you listed a whole bunch of different problems, from alcohol to lies, control and manipulation. You know, this might sound a bit presumptuous of me, but, like, what if we could actually solve all of these things fairly well with, like, a couple common steps? And that's what we're actually going to talk about today. Is like a lot of these things are connected by some very common principles. And that's why like this idea is really exciting, you know, why Heather and I wanted to talk about it today. Like you said, this is all about that stress, that tension, the anger, resentment, all these strong negative emotions. And it can all be kind of summed up and what's called Cartman's drama triangle. So just a small bit of history. So Cartman was like, at the time, was a student. And, you know, there was some sort of, there's like competitions in kind of developing theories or ideas at the time. And Cartman was really into theater and drama. And then he kind of noticed that as people were experiencing a lot of this tension and drama in their relationships, that it mirrored somewhat a bit like the theater or drama that he liked as a hobby. He was noticing that there are times when people would act out certain roles within their relationship, and sometimes they'd switch around between these roles. Now, that's where, like, I think all that's really needed. You could look much further into the theory. I thought it was kind of amusing that Cartman really ran with this theory. And, you know, besides the drama triangle, like, there's like a whole, like, I don't remember how many, like 30, 40, 50 other triangles that he liked to discuss. But they're mostly all related to this one. And the triangle that I'm referring to is, you know, is this Cartman's drama triangle. And essentially the idea is this, that if there is a lot of this tension or drama in some interactions, you are acting out one of three roles and you are placing your partner in one of the other two roles. So the roles being the victim, the hero or rescuer, and the villain or persecutor. So such as if someone is acting out the victim role, the people that they're interacting with, that where there's some drama, they're placing that other person in either the hero or the villain role. And, you know, we can go through the triangle. It's the same thing. If you're in a hero position, you are placing someone else in the persecutor or villain or the victim role. And just to give a very brief overview before we start discussing, like, you know, more application here. Basically, if you're in the victim role, this is very much like the poor me sort of position. And there's oftentimes a lot of sadness or frustration or helplessness. And the big key idea is other people need to change in order for me to feel okay. Mm-hmm. So you might be saying, this person is putting me down in the villain role. They just need to chill out. They need to be nicer. They need to stop being so mean. And then I can feel okay. Or this person, why won't they help me? If they just helped me, then I wouldn't be in this position. You know, placing someone in the hero role. The hero, we might say, oh, the hero. Hero's great, right? We like heroes. The problem is that a hero can step into this drama as well. And it's very much this idea of poor you. And there can often be a feeling of resentment having to take care of others, having to solve other people's problems, being placed into this role where you have no choice but to support other people and correct things for them. A big thing is like they need to feel needed. It can also lean towards that, a little bit towards control. Like if I don't do this, no one else will. So I'm going to take control of it. And so they say, well, poor you, or here's this other person that I'm fighting with because they're the villain and I need to stop them. Mm-hmm. I'm the one to step up and take charge and make sure that this other person isn't stepping on other people. The last role, the villain or the persecutor, it's very much like, why can't you do anything right? There's a lot of anger. They might plow through other people to make things right. It's very much this idea of, I'm going to make other people change in order to feel okay. And these are the roles. And so if the villain there is placing someone in the victim role, they're like, okay, they're not doing anything okay. They're just like this helpless. I'm gonna keep them down to make sure that things are okay. Or here's this goody two shoes over here, and they think they're so great. I'm gonna do my own thing anyway. These are the roles. And while acting out any of these roles, if there's any drama, like I said, they are placing the other person in one of the other two roles. Now, so what? All right. So what if you're in drama? You know, like a lot of you might say, well, I don't like being in drama. So why would people go into these positions, Heather, is the big question. And my conclusion here is that there are some really big benefits of acting out these roles. So I want to get into a little bit of a discussion here, Heather. I want to ask, okay, have you ever been in this sort of situation? Have you ever, it might sound like dumb, like of course, but you know, have you ever like been caught up in some of this drama?
Absolutely. So I'm actually working on this with my kids. We have a parenting coach who's amazing, and she came on here and did a podcast with us a little while ago. And she's actually the first one that really introduced me to the idea of the drama triangle and helped me recognize it in the kids, right? I've got the one son that tends to be this persecutor. You know, you need to do this right. You didn't do your chore right. You need to fix this, or I'm just going to kind of bully you, right? And then we've got the victim. Oh, he's picking on me again. Mom, make him stop. And I come in as the rescuer. Cut it out, da-da-da-da-da, right? And the triangle goes on and on and on. And then I took a deeper look at this role, this whole drama triangle, and the roles I'm taking on in my marriage. And we tend to take on those that were modeled to us or the same roles that we had with our parents. And so for me, I tend to go into a cycle here, and I'll just describe it briefly, because hopefully that will help anyone out there to realize maybe what Daryl is. So with me, I tend to take more of the villain role. Sounds awful, because I'm a good person.
Well, that's the point here, Heather, is like, you're not, no one is a villain. You're right. Not a villain, like you're saying, but sometimes we step into these roles.
Role, right, where I'm like, I'm trying to make things right, and I do try to plow through people to make it right. And I do try to get things done, which then makes Ben feel like a victim. And then he's like, oh, poor me, this is so hard, and he gets helpless, and he withdraws. And it goes a little bit into what we've talked a lot here about the pursuer and avoider role, right? There's some similarities there as well. And then I start to feel really bad for Ben, and then I step into the hero rescuer role, where then I'm trying to say, oh, I'm sorry that, you know, now I need to take care of you, and I need to save you from all the pressure I put on you before. And so now, you know, now I try to rescue him out of the victimhood. And eventually that doesn't work either. And so then I start to feel like a victim because all my efforts aren't working. And oh, poor me. Now Ben is still withdrawn from me and everything I did wasn't good enough. So now there's something wrong with me and I'm not good enough and I'm not worthy. And the cycle continues, right? And then sometimes he'll step into the hero role and try to rescue me when I'm feeling like a victim, which then makes me feel a little more empowered, which then makes me push a little more for something, and on 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 we go.
Well, I mean, and Heather, we talk a lot about like these patterns that we step into. I know like in our client work, we say, okay, let's figure out the pattern that keeps feeding in on itself. And this is what you're describing. Like, and here it is, everyone. Heather and I are not immune to these things either within our own respective relationships. We have our own patterns and things that we're sensitive to. And you're saying like, here you are, you're kind of just going around in a circle. Well, in a triangle, I guess.
Triangle, yeah. Yeah, what does it look like for you? And what have you seen in your marriage and in your life, Mark?
Well, I know, like, for me, myself, sometimes I get into this position where I'm like, okay, well, I just need to, you know, be quiet and push down my own needs because I need to take care of other people. So sometimes I get into that hero position, and just like I explained, like, there's a little bit of resentment. Like, okay, well, why do I have to be the one to apologize and make everything right? Why do I have to be the first one to step up and listen to this other person? Why do I need to be the one that's calming everything down? I'll admit that sometimes with my children, I step into the villain role, and I'm a little bit sensitive to like chaos going on around me. So if my kids are like, well, Oliver's doing this to me and Caitlin's not doing that and Marley is over here, and I'll be just like, well, fine. Well, no one gets what they want and everyone's going to be unhappy then. Is that what you want? Like, I mean, it's a little bit dramatized there, but I step into that position and it feels good to step into some of these roles. It can be like, oddly enough, it's, can feel a little bit comforting to step into that victim role, because then what does it do? It excuses me from having to do anything. You know, with Jen and I, we're very aware of some of the sensitivities that we have. So like, I know that I am sometimes sensitive to not feeling heard, and I'm aware of this. And so we've learned to step out of that pattern between the two of us, at least on that dynamic. Some other areas we might struggle a little bit more, but going back to this idea, stepping into these roles can feel good sometimes. I know that for me, like I said, when I'm seeing that chaos in my home and everyone's upset and everyone's like complaining, what happens? If I put my foot down and I'm the villain, people listen to me. And, you know, they step into line. And what happens is the chaos goes away. Kind of, you know, not really, because everyone's now like, oh, dad's upset and dad's, you know, we need to do things to, in order for dad not to be upset. And that's not a position that I want my kids to be in. But each of these roles, we fall into them because it does get us some things that we want, even if it creates a lot of drama in the process. I don't know. I mean, have you seen that? Like you mentioned your kids step into these roles sometimes.
Right. And we do. What really happens is this really interesting exchange of power, control, energy, manipulation. And it really all comes from when we're really in survival mode. For everyone listening, I'd love to hear a comment from you guys, what you think your role is and why that actually is serving you in some way, right? So there's an interesting book I just want to talk about real quick. Maybe you guys have heard of it before. I have it on, here on Hoopla, The Celestine Prophecy. And it talks a lot about, there's actually four roles in this book, but it talks about these three for sure. Mm-hmm. And it goes into this idea that there's energy exchanged and that we will often pair ourselves with someone of the equal, you know, the opposite energy. So the victim needs a villain and the villain needs a victim because they get this incredible amount of energy from each other. And we do get very addicted to that drama, to that cycle of give and take and manipulation and all these different things. It makes it sound like we're really, really evil, but we're not. What we're doing is we're mostly really in survival mode and we're trying to get our needs met in some way. And this is the way that was modeled to us by our parents or our family. This is the dynamic and the role that we found in our culture and our society. And we'll go into like how to kind of set this down because it doesn't have to be this pattern, right? And like you mentioned with my kids, I'm trying to help them see like when you're kind of going after your brother, it's because you don't feel good about yourself. And so you're trying to like suck some energy from him so you feel better. So you feel like you have more control in your life. Is there a better way of getting that same need met than like trying to suck energy from your brother by putting him down so you feel better, you know, and trying to bring some awareness there? The point is that when we are feeling overwhelmed or stressed or exhausted or like our needs are not getting met, in the sense that it gets them met at all, but it's not very effective in the long haul because it only perpetuates the drama. And we actually really don't want the drama. We want to get out of survival mode and into creation where we feel empowered and we're able to get our needs met in really healthy ways. But yeah, it does work. Like just another example real quick. My kids are all in the car. I just took them out to the trampoline park and spent 2 hours, you know, feeling like I'm the hero here. I'm giving you guys all this time to get your energy out and have fun. And on the way back, they were just at each other, just at each other. And I tried to just, you know, be my higher self and say, please choose kindness. Please think about, you know, what you're saying. You know, let's have kindness and love towards each other. And they just didn't listen. And finally, I just went, enough, you know, and I could feel all of their energy just go, boom. You know, because they gave it to me because I took the villain role and I just said enough, but it did stop the chaos like you talked about too, Mark. So it is effective in a way. The problem is when we come to rely on these as the only way to get our needs met, and then that only perpetuates the drama.
Now, sure. I noticed here, Heather, that this actually plays out on larger scales as well. I mean, can't you all see large groups of people stepping into these roles? Now we can look at this politically, like, you know, I'm going to discuss it in a broad terms. I'm not taking sides here. I want to make that clear, but we can see like around the elections here in the United States, people who are supporting Trump, like, oh, woe is me. The election is being stolen. Whether you believe that or not, it doesn't matter. But they were stepping into this victim role. Then other people said, I'm going to be the hero. I'm going to go protest and I'm going to stop this. We can also see around the pandemic, people are like, oh, why do people, you know, why can't other people make good choices around this? You know, there's all this tension around vaccines and things. There are, and I've seen these words written specifically, like, the people who don't get vaccinated can go die in a ditch. They're taking up valuable space in the hospital. Whether you agree with that or not, doesn't matter, but we can say that there's definitely some villain energy behind that statement. And Exactly. Like I said, it's good to observe it. Doesn't matter whether we agree, like where we are, they're stepping, you know, in large scale, they're stepping into some specific roles, and there's some themes in these interactions between groups. And they're saying, okay, well, they're the villains over here, and I'm just the poor victim, or I'm the hero, and I'm going to stop these villains over there.
Right.
And we can see how that then plays out in large scale between these groups, and then the theme keeps getting recycled over and over again in the discussions. Exactly. I find that very fascinating, that it's not just an individual sort of drama and the pattern playing out, but it's the same pattern and drama plays out on the larger scale as well.
Yeah, it is. We can see it in the politics and wars and contention between people. It's definitely there. Even if we just take it, this is another interesting insight to the more micro level inside mm-hmm. myself. Where am I the victim inside myself? Where am I the rescuer for myself? Where am I the prosecutor or the persecutor, not prosecutor, the persecutor, right? Mm-hmm. And the internal battles that we even have inside of ourselves. You know, I'll be like, oh, poor me. Like, I just don't, like, no one really cares. And I try really hard and it's not enough. And then I'll be like, I'm going to rescue you myself, right? And I'll get into all this positive action and then I'll get resentful about that, you know? So it's really interesting that these patterns definitely are seen both internally inside ourselves and then in our marriage, inside our families, and then inside our communities and the world at large. So I think we kind of understand now what this whole drama triangle is about and how it only perpetuates more drama and more division. It does service in a way that we can, every single role is actually a manipulation, right? It's a manipulation to try to get something. You're just going about it in a different way. It's a way to get needs met in a very base level, but it's definitely not the highest level or the most healthy or effective level. And so how do we step out of the drama triangle? How do we step out of that survival mode and those kind of like base emotions of fear and anger and tension and stress and create in a new and better way? What do you think, Mark?
I kind of got part of this idea from a mentor of mine, and I thought like the idea needed expanding. So like the idea I heard was clear agreements. And I thought, okay, clear agreements is a wonderful place to start, but I think that's much easier when both partners within the triangle, you know, the people who are having the interactions are willing to have those agreements. So I like breaking it down into clear requests, clear offers, and clear boundaries. And I think this clears a lot of the drama within the situation. And what I mean by that, a clear request is like basically being to openly discuss what is wanted without the drama. Now, that's where, like I said, that's where I heard the idea initially, where my mentor stopped. I think a lot of times that even with clear requests, it's not so straightforward. So someone might say, I want to reconcile. I want to feel heard, or I want, you know, whatever they happen to want. And for some reason, there's still some resistance in those clear requests. And so I do think that a clear offer, or basically a discussion of accommodations that are needed to meet those requests, can go a long way. So if, you know, a basic example is saying, hey, I want to feel heard. Okay, it's a reasonable request. We want to feel heard. Why isn't that happening to begin with if it's a reasonable request? And so in this hypothetical example, we might say, okay, well, if you want to be heard, then you need to offer up speaking your voice a little bit more clearly. You need to like speak up when you're upset. You need to make it clear that this is an important moment. And so you might need that accommodation, or you might need to take that responsibility in order for your request to be met. I also think that there are, you know, a lot of times people have some unspoken boundaries, some lines that they do not wish to cross, and this can muddy the water as well. So if they're saying, I want you to reconcile, I want you to come back, and the other person has drawn this line in the sand and not really speaking about it, it can gum up the process of having clear agreements. And I do, there's ways kind of to get around those, but you know, I do think that this plays into the whole solution, you know, where people have boundaries that aren't being discussed, or they aren't really aware of the boundaries that they have set, or perhaps boundaries are too inflexible. But I do think that clearing that up can definitely help you step away from the drama. So I'm curious, Heather, have you and Ben, or you and the kids, have you actually like gone through this and like really sat down and made some very clear agreements? And how has that worked out?
Yeah, so one thing that I was hearing from Ben even recently was like, I just don't have a big voice in this relationship. You know, I feel like I just don't have a big voice. And so I felt like that was a clear request, but we weren't getting to the point there about like what needs to happen in order for that to be met, because it was just kind of putting that out there, which was, I guess, vague to me for sure, you know? And so I needed to get more clarity on, okay, what would actually help you feel like you have a big voice, right? Or he'll say things like, I'm just so tired. I never get a break, right? And which is a request for more of a break. And so again, with that one, I had to get more clarity. Like, what does that actually look like for you? Because we can't read your mind. And we don't know, you know, at this moment of time, Dad's wanting a break, you know?
I want to point out something here. I don't mean to, I do mean to interrupt, but you are interpreting his requests, right. But I'm going to, you know, feedback is, you know, what you were describing there are not specifically requests, they're complaints.
Right.
And this is where I think a lot of people get tripped up, is the complaints come out and they're not recognized as requests. You did really well. You're like, oh, I'm hearing a complaint and I'm recognizing it as a request and let's actually talk about it. But I think a lot of people get stuck there.
Right. And so like with the, I'm feeling so burnt out, I never get a break. You know, we just had to discuss about what we both need in order to meet the requirement of him getting a break. And so that looked like for me, like, hey, I can't read your mind. I don't know what's going on in your world. And so if you need a break, just let me know. Like, you need to let me know, like, hey, for the next hour, I'm just going to take a break, right? And that way I know this is not a good time to ask him to take care of the kids and do those things, because then in the past, he would just do them resentfully and then feel like I never get a break. So that kind of clear communication there was important, as well as the clear boundaries that if he says, you know, I need a break at this time, then that it's off limits to me, you know, unless it's like an emergency, but me, you know, intruding on that time to make sure that he got that time so that he felt like he was getting a break. And then also me be able to have clear requests about what I needed to filled and have a break as well. So it felt balanced, right? But that's an example of how it can get very muddled, right? I was hearing complaints without anything, that it just felt very vague. And so being able to make a clear request, right? This is what is needed here. And when I've done that with him and we talk about how to get that met, it works so much better than just stepping into the victim role and feeling like, oh, they never take care of my needs and oh, poor me, or just me bulldozing ahead in, you know, the persecutor role and just doing what I want to do no matter what, right? So it definitely takes the drama out of the situation. And we were able to communicate, hey, I'm not feeling heard here, or I'm not feeling respected, or I'm not feeling valued. I'm not feeling very important to you, or I'm not feeling very emotionally connected. And how could we go about that in a way that we both feel really good about this? And then creating that awareness, as well as the respect of those needs and those boundaries, feels so much better than going into the drama.
I think a lot of this, you know, we sometimes talk about the importance of being able to have feedback, and that's a lot of what this is. There kind of needs to be some ability within a relationship to voice some concerns or make some requests and have those requests accommodated in some way. And, you know, what this process is about is saying, okay, well, here's the request. You know, how do we make it work? You know, what needs to be in place to accommodate this request? And is there anything blocking, like a specific value or boundary that prevents this from going forward? How do we get around it? And that's kind of the aim here, is to facilitate a discussion around these things rather than just kind of pushing it all down and pretending like it's not happening and then having all this, you know, negative emotion popping out sideways. You know, for Jen and I, you know, I saw a lot of the comments were about people's like sex life, and like there's issues around like infidelity or, you know, the lack of sex or affection. You know, just to be very transparent, like sometimes Jen and I have to negotiate that field as well. But when we, you know, are very clear with our communication, saying, hey, look, I'm feeling like this is missing a little bit. I would, you know, when we make the request, like, I would really like to spend some time with you just being physically affectionate. You know, I will say 9 times out of 10, that's a much better discussion than, like, you know, the one where one of us might say, well, you don't care about me, or you don't have any time for me, I'm not important, you know, where it's just the complaint side of it.
Yeah. Right. It creates the defensiveness and steps us right back into those roles.
Yeah. We see this a lot with clients, and I think there's some very common themes. I mean, I mentioned some of them, but like we see this a lot with infidelity or sexual incompatibility. I see this a lot with issues surrounding control. Even, you know, I just saw a comment here, even Melissa is saying, I don't get feedback from my husband. Mm-hmm. Like, things don't come up and resentment is just pushed down. I will see it often with like a balance of power sort of issues, like one partner not speaking up for themselves, like Melissa was just saying. Her husband is not giving feedback. He's not speaking up. And so there's kind of the sense of like maybe someone is a little bit more decisive. And it sounds like you're describing that sort of situation in your relationship. Like, Heather, I know you're a decisive person. Mm-hmm. And Ben saying, hey, I don't feel like I have this huge voice. And so we see this over and over and over in a lot of these issues where they step into these roles and don't speak up about what's actually wanted. And instead, we have these intense negative emotions. I do see some scenarios here, Heather, where this doesn't work out super well. And I do think that there's, in these cases, a lot more support is needed to work through. It's especially when there's a mismatch in values, or when the boundaries have, the line in the sand has been drawn and it doesn't match up. An example here, like super strong values that act as boundaries for each partner. Like if one partner, as an example, desires strong participation in religious activities, versus the other partner saying, hey, I want to have lots of freedom of choice. I don't like the expectations here. I don't like the rules maybe within a religious organization. You have like two lines in the sand and there's not middle ground. And even if you might have a clear request, it's still, there's nowhere in the middle to meet in some of these issues. I'm saying that, I'm going to put that in quotes because I do think there is middle ground even in those situations. It just requires a lot more discussion and perhaps some flexibility. But I'm trying to even think of like within my own marriage where this has popped up. And I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. I don't know if you've seen any of these scenarios. I'm trying to think of what happened, because Jen and I have certainly had these lines in the sand where we said this is really important here. And, you know, like thinking about how we got past it, you know, Jen and I we consider ourselves to be very flexible people, and we ended up talking through those. Maybe we need to have like another discussion specifically on this, is what I'm thinking here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Heather?
You're talking about when they have you're just on very polar opposite ends, mm-hmm. on an issue. and then how you actually bridge that gap.
Yeah, if there's like clear lines in the sand, they don't overlap, there's clear difference in values. I think I have to give this some more thought, maybe for another discussion, but like we've certainly had clients in that position and we've worked through those situations. And I know I've worked through those situations in my own marriage with Jen. It does, what I'm getting at here is it does complicate like this, you know, discussion that we're having. It can be an area where even with clear requests or offers of accommodation, it just doesn't always work out.
Yeah, I know that probably most people that are listening to this are saying like, here I am wanting to work on my marriage and here's my spouse saying, I'm done, I'm not gonna work on the marriage, I want out, right? What do you see with that kind of situation? Can we make still clear requests and have those be effective for bridging that? Or does it require more support than just simply having clear requests, offers, and boundaries?
Well, I'll tell you what I do in those scenarios. Because I've had that very conversation with many clients and they're like, well, what I want is to reconcile and they don't want it. Mm-hmm. So what then? What I tell them is I say, okay, if that's the request that you have, are you offering a big enough accommodation? Are you having a big enough offer to make that a win-win scenario for them? And often they're like, they sit there for a moment. They're like, I guess not. So typically like it's a big difference. And I usually say, hey, let's actually work to create some more middle ground here. And so my usual suggestion is I say, okay, let's make a request that's more acceptable, that steps in that direction. And I guess, you know, when I'm really thinking about it, this is really what happens in a lot of these scenarios when values are at different ends and there is a solution, is they take incremental steps to kind of come closer together. And as requests are a little bit more clearly defined, or as offers are made, or there's some amount of flexibility given. As an example, stepping down from reconciliation and say, hey, I would like to communicate better. Mm-hmm. I would like to have more respect within the relationship, which is still stepping towards, taking steps necessary towards reconciliation, but not saying that's the step that we're taking.
Yeah.
My experience is that frequently as steps are taken to close that gap, it becomes easier to make that request.
Right. The challenge that we see is that most people, they're so firm and no, we want to reconcile. And they're just like, no, I want out. And then we just dig our heels in and we just pull further and further apart. That's where most people go. They don't realize that there are these intermittent steps that we can take to start to bring you closer together and bridge that gap. I know that for me, you talked about like when you and Jen are on the opposite end of something that you both really value or feel strongly about. For me, it's finding that common ground, right? And realizing that we usually have the same goal. We're just going about it in two different ways. And so putting down those, like that helps us to let go of those self-defense, right? And then need to defend myself and defend my position and say, no, this is the right way and the only right way and I'm right and you're wrong. Because that will never lead us to coming together and meeting each other's needs there. It's only going to perpetuate the drama triangle. Back and forth, right?
Yeah, you illustrate a good point here is that there are multiple approaches when this is the issue. And this is a little bit what I'm saying is like sometimes if you're not really familiar with how to navigate these areas, where your relationship doesn't have that healthy discussion, there often is need for extra support to examine solutions. Jen and I need support on occasion. We need an outside perspective, and this is all I do every day is talk about relationships. So, you know, I not to pat myself on the back, but I think I'm pretty comfortable having these discussions, but even so, like sometimes I need an outside perspective to look at like some other solutions here.
Right. Same here. And invite those that are like, you know, I do need that as well. So we do a free assessment with you guys and can help see what's really going on here and what steps you can take so that you're not just digging your heels into the right, I'm wrong, you're wrong, I'm right, and just like pitting ourselves against each other or just perpetuating the triangle over and over and over again. So we can go and do an assessment with you and decide, is it possible to reconcile in this situation? And if so, what's the best way to go around that? Because like Mark just said, it's not just a cookie cutter, one size fits all type deal. There is going to be a very specific route for you to take to get to the result that you want, but we'll help you make those little course corrections to help you get to that result. So you can do that at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. If you haven't yet had a consultation with us, we really encourage you to do that because you're going to come away from that one call alone with so much clarity and peace of mind and knowing if there's hope for you or not and have that direction on how to move forward. So encourage you guys to do that. And now, Mark, you ready for Marriage Mythbuster? Do you have any thoughts about the drama triangle?
No, I think we covered it pretty well here. We can move on to our myth.
Yeah.
So our myth today is your spouse completes you, or at least they should, is kind of the idea. I think, you know, even myself, I get into this mode of thinking sometimes. And, you know, I think there's some room around it. But, you know, the fact is that a healthy or, you know, in my opinion, ideal relationship relies on each individual being complete on their own, that they bring their strengths to the table. I do think that, you know, the truth here is that oftentimes there's some complementary, you know, factors, behaviors, personalities, and I think that can work out well. But the problem comes in when, like, it starts to veer more towards, like, instead of complementary, more of, like, I need this other person to fill these gaps. Mm. A lot of times, you know, if it gets to highly unhealthy levels, that's where you start having, like, severe issues with codependency. And, you know, when that partner doesn't fill those gaps, there's a lot of tension, anxiety, stress, or perhaps anger, and, you know, like all those negative emotions start popping up. So, like, there is like a healthy, this is all like one big spectrum. And there is a more healthy side of this, like where, hey, we're complete and we complement each other's skills pretty well, but we still take responsibility for many things. And on the other side is we fill each other's gaps. I'm dependent on this person. And if they are not filling in this gap adequately, now we have a lot of discord and problems. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a compelling myth. The idea that we could have someone in our life that so fully completes us that, you know, we're perfect together and nothing can go wrong if we're together. And the truth is that no one is going to fill those gaps in all the time. There's going to be times when your partner might be sick, they might be stressed out, they might, you know, have other things going on in their life, and they don't perfectly match up. And, you know, much like our discussion today, there are situations where the couple might complement each other. If there are clear agreements surrounding these interactions, then everything has the potential to be fine. You know, if it's agreed upon that, like, spouse A is going to take care of the finances and spouse B is going to, you know, take care of, like, doctor's appointments, you know, this can be an area where you fill in each other's gaps, but it starts to become unhealthy when you broaden these areas and it's all encompassing, as in spouse A is going to take care of all the organizational tasks of the marriage, which is a huge, huge thing. It's when the pitfall happens when expectations or agreements are unclear, or one partner is put into this position to fill the gap unwillingly. And that's exactly what I'm describing. If you say, I rely on this partner for everything organization-wise, and that partner is like, I don't want to take care of this all the time, or I'm stressed today and I don't want to take care of it, or I'm sick today and I just want to put it down, this is where the issue happens. So this idea that there's a perfect match out there. Someone who so completely complements me that, you know, we have nothing to worry about can easily get into an unhealthy position. That's the point that I'm trying to make. Like I said, I do think greater happiness occurs in a lot of these scenarios where expectations are clear, much like we talked about today, that feedback can be given and circumstances can be adjusted as needed. And in that sense, it's not so much about the other person completing you, it's like, how do you flow in the relationship?
Beautiful, love that. The way that I see it is, even in my imperfection, I'm good enough, I'm whole, I'm complete. And Ben and his imperfection is good enough, whole and complete. And then together we can become one, right? There's that idea of unity and solidarity, that we uplift each other and provide greater support and levels of happiness than we would have on our own. But like you said, we're not going into that, I need you to fill the gaps for me.
You're not relying on Ben to feel complete. You appreciate that Ben is there for you. You appreciate the support that you each give to each other, and you appreciate that you're better off being together. But it's not like you have to have Ben in order to have any sense of happiness in your life at right. all.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. Thanks for sharing that, and I hope that that gives some clarity to those that are listening. All right, so thank you, Mark. And next week, we're going to talk about how to talk about anything with your spouse. How to talk about anything and be accepted. So looking forward to sharing that with you guys, and thank you for joining today.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.